from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this week for Michael Krasny. In the hour ahead, plans to make San Francisco more bike-friendly. The city just approved 34 new miles of bike lanes on major corridors like 5th Street, Ocean Avenue, and Portola Drive. Approval comes after a lawsuit tied up the plan in court for 3 years, and opponents say they're not done fighting yet. Coming up, how the bike plan will change life for people who use bikes in this town, how it could affect drivers, small business owners, and neighbors, and will it make San Francisco's streets any safer for people getting around on two wheels and those who don't? We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Well, San Francisco already has a reputation as one of the most bike-friendly cities in the U.S., and that reputation is about to be enhanced. Last week, the Municipal Transportation Agency Board unanimously approved a plan to add 34 miles of bike lanes to the 45 or so miles that already exist. The plan had been held up in court for years, so bikers and their supporters are elated that it's finally about to happen. But there are concerns about lost parking spaces and changes in traffic flow that could make driving in some neighborhoods tougher, at least until everyone gets used to it. And some wonder if San Francisco is just becoming more bike-friendly or also becoming more hostile to cars and their drivers. Joining us to talk about the plan are Leah Shaham. She is executive director of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us here in the studio, Rachel Gordon, a reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle, who covers these issues for the city, for the paper, I should say. Also here, Judson True, spokesman for the Municipal Transportation Agency. Is that your correct title?
Absolutely. Nice to be here, Scott.
Good to have you. And we will be joined by other guests as we go along this hour as well. Rachel, let me begin with you. Describe the plan. What does it entail? And give us a kind of timeline.
What this plan entails is it's a vision of San Francisco to make San Francisco's bicycle network more complete, more comprehensive. We've got scattered bicycle lanes, as you mentioned. There are about 45 miles of lanes now, about 200 of bike routes throughout the city. But routes are very different than lanes. They aren't the striped lanes that separate, supposed to separate traffic, auto traffic, from bicyclists. What this plan does is really connect a lot of areas in the city, the bike lanes in different neighborhoods in the city, brings it more together. It also has other policies that aren't necessarily striping roadways, but things like new signals that are for bicyclists only to make the street safer for their progress through the city streets. It has more bike racks in the city will be set up. Even trial projects like on San Francisco's metro system, the light rail system. Can you bring bikes aboard those trains? Right now, you can just bring them around aboard Muni. This is a plan that's been around for years now. I think 2005 was when it was originally adopted. We have to remember that it was the city was sued in 2006. A court came in and said, wait a minute, folks, you can't implement this plan unless you do comprehensive environmental reviews. And we're going to hear probably from one of the people, the litigants in that suit, who wanted to slow things down.
Give us a sense of like a timeline. I mean, there were, I think, 45 of the 46 projects were approved last week. And so what happens to implement that? What needs to happen?
And we can talk to Judson with the real details of that. But there are about 60 projects in the bike plan that are considered near term. That's to happen in the next few years. 45 of these projects, or 46 projects, went before the Municipal Transportation Agency Board last week for approval, individual projects. 45 of those projects were approved. So an astounding number, most ever that were approved in one sweep for San Francisco when it comes for the bike lanes. Now what happens, though, is that the opponents of the bicycle plan have a chance to appeal the Planning Commission's decision, not to get too technical, but the Planning Commission had to sign off on the environmental review. They did, as expected, the planning commissioners. Now it can be appealed to the Board of Supervisors. Once that's done, the city can go back to the Superior Court, say, look, we have our certified environmental impact report. please lift the injunction so we can go forward. So that's the next step. They're expecting implementation to start perhaps late summer, more likely early fall. They plan to roll these projects out over the next 3 years, 1 to 3 years. City officials say they want to ramp it up, make it happen sooner than later. The price tag on those, about $14 million. A problem with that, they don't have all the money in hand.
All right. And Judson True from the MTA, give us a sense of what has to happen as those lanes and all of this, all these projects get implemented.
Well, I think the key is, as Rachel mentioned, is that 45 of the projects were actually legislated down to the minute details of the design on Friday at our board meeting. So we are really much further along than we normally are in actually being ready to implement not only the bike lanes, but also bicycle parking throughout the city. We're choosing locations right now about where to put in new parking based on hundreds of requests that we've received from around the city in the last few years. And also the sharrows, the arrows with the bicycle symbol and the stencils on
them. Sharrows?
Yeah, they're called sharrows. They're actually pioneered here in San Francisco, and they're really about making motorists aware of bicycles and also keeping bicyclists kind of out of the dooring area and really helping to designate the network. So we're ready to go on lanes, bike parking, and sharrows. Literally, the moment the injunction is lifted, we want to be putting paint on the street. And so our folks in our office are working really hard to kind of to get that plan ready and to line up the funding with the projects and really get moving.
And why the urgency? Why do you have the paintbrushes ready?
I think it's really about pent-up demand. I mean, even during this period of the last 3 years almost exactly where we haven't been able to make a single physical change to the streetscape related to bicycles because of the court injunction, we've seen an incredible increase in bicycling. We've seen a 43% increase in the last 2 years. About 6% of trips in San Francisco are by bicycle, 128,000 a day, which is really an astounding number. We have about close to 700,000 boardings a day on Muni. So you get an idea that we're not just talking about a few people that decide to ride their bikes to get in better shape. We're talking about hundreds and literally more than 100,000 people using bicycles every day for transportation in San Francisco. And our goal with a bicycle plan is to make bicycling safer and more attractive to all those people.
And what about drivers? What impact will there be on drivers, you know, and people who get around the city in cars and trucks? So
I think, you know, I'm a bicyclist, a walker, a Muni rider, and a driver. And I think that it's really about sharing the road. We have a transit-first policy in San Francisco that prioritizes transit, bicyclists, and pedestrians, which are all sustainable ways of getting around. And I think there's an increasing interest in and recognition of how important those modes are to the environment. And I think that, you know, drivers are still, you know, drivers are still in some ways primary anywhere in the United States.
But there will be changes. I mean, are we going to lose parking spaces? Are there going to be changes in signaling?
There will be changes. I mean, the environmental impact report for the bicycle plan, when you add in all the comments and responses and the CEQA findings, which are the environmental findings, totals close to 2,000 pages. So we're talking about significant analysis going on about how different streets will change. One thing we've
So how many parking spaces for you? I know that's one thing drivers get
nervous
about.
For example, with the 45 projects that were legislated on Friday, our estimate is that 880 parking spaces will be replaced as part of those projects, either with bicycle lanes or in some cases with Muni stops, where right now there's just a Muni pole. And although it's worth noting that of those 880 spaces, almost 500 of them are on two streets, Alameda and Bayshore, that don't really have that much demand. They're not fully utilized for parking. So it's not all about parking removal.
And Leah Shaham, your group has been really advocating for this for a long time. How do you see it as changing life for bicyclists in town?
This is a huge step up for the 128,000 people who are biking regularly in the city. Obviously, it's going to make our lives safer, more easy bicycling. But I think what's really important is two other populations. Number one, all of the latent cyclists out there. There was an independent poll done about a year and a half ago that asked folks, would they like to bicycle for transportation more often? And a third of San Francisco adults said, yeah, I want to bike in the city more often. What would make them bike more? Feeling safer on the road, having more dedicated lanes. So thinking about that, how would we switch a third of trips in the city to more people biking? That's a great thing for the city, obviously, in terms of environment, health. But what it's also going to do is help all those people who really do need to drive. And I'll say, as a bicycle advocate, I acknowledge that, of course, there are times you need to take a car for a trip, and there always are going to be. But what do we do to help those folks get where they need to go and find parking? We, frankly, make more room for them on the street and in the parking zones by getting more people on bikes, walking, and on buses. So this is really a win-win for the city, again, not just in terms of environment and health, but really making room on the roads for people who do need to drive. You know, I often think, Imagine if those 128,000 people who are biking all got into their cars tomorrow. Imagine the further traffic jams we'd have on the city. So I think in a way, you know, bicyclists are doing a really big favor for those who do need to drive.
Now, there is a very long bike lane on Market Street, one that goes across the Octavia Boulevard on-ramp and off-ramp. And that was put down. And that, I think, is what triggered, if I'm not mistaken, Judson True, a lawsuit that led to this delay. Is that correct or not?
I think that the lawsuit, I mean, you can speak to the litigants in particular, but the lawsuit came more, it was a technical issue about whether the bicycle plan had received sufficient analysis under the California Environmental Quality Act, which is an old law that is in place to make sure that...
Well, it's an old law, but it's fundamental to California.
Absolutely. It is fundamental. It's about development. It's about, it's about looking at all sorts of impacts, biological, traffic, transportation, and the lawsuit was specifically about whether the bicycle plan had received that analysis. The court found that it had not. And over the last 3 years, the city family has been working incredibly hard to get that EIR done. And it was certified by the Planning Commission on Thursday. And then the findings were also adopted by our board on Friday.
Well, I want to bring in Rob Anderson, who is a party to the litigation. He's a blogger and self-described anti-bicycling activist, I think. Is that fair to say, Mr. Anderson?
No, it isn't, actually. I have nothing against people riding bikes if they so choose. What I object to is, and many of us object to, is redesigning city streets for a small minority when, you know, the overwhelming majority of people of San Francisco use other means of transportation. And, you know, the real alternative to driving in San Francisco is not bicycles for most people. It's the muni system. You know, it has, as Mr. True pointed out, it has nearly 700,000 boardings every weekday. You know, and as we learned from the environmental impact report on the bicycle plan, it's going to have significant, unavoidable impacts on a number of muni lines in the city. So I don't think it's a very sensible policy to redesign our streets and slow muni down when muni already has some serious on-time problems.
Now, you filed the lawsuit a few years ago, and the city was forced to do a more comprehensive EIR. Are you satisfied that the city looked at the questions that you and others raised?
Well, yeah, more or less. You know, but Mr. True said, talked about, you know, sufficient environmental review. The fact of the matter is the city did no environmental review of a massive, ambitious bicycle plan. It was like more than 500 pages long. They did no environmental review.
And, but you're satisfied that they've done it now.
As we predicted, the environmental impact report is telling us this plan is going to have significant impacts all over the city. It's going to slow down traffic on many streets and many muni lines.
Let me get Judson True to respond to that. What impact does muni expect it will have, and for that matter, on other traffic going through streets?
Sure. I think this is a great example of the wisdom of the voters in combining the Municipal Transportation Agency and creating the MTA from Muni and what was in the Department of Parking and Traffic. Because as we've gone through the EIR process and designed all of the projects that were legislated last week, and as we work on the ones coming up, we've actually worked very hard in the design process with people sitting right next to each other on the Muni team and on the Parking and Traffic team and the sustainable Livable Streets team to make sure that those delays to Muni are minimized. We've just gone through a multi-year process of studying the Muni system, and we know that delays to Muni are cost us money and make the system less efficient and are really a huge a problem. And so we've been able to work on things like signalization, looking at signal timing, restricting turns in some cases to reduce the delays to Muni from any kind of reduction of traffic lanes. And I think that having us all under one roof at the SFMTA has been a big part of working to minimize those delays.
Rachel Gordon, you've covered City Hall and city politics for many, many years. Is it your sense that this how would you describe the political dynamics around this issue?
I think in many ways that the policy coming from City Hall is in front of public sentiment. Now, Leah says that the Bicycle Coalition, 10,000 members strong, you'll hear that anytime they get up in public testimony. We hear them say that there are well more than 100,000 people who cycle every day, and it definitely is a growing trend of getting around the city, both, as you said, for Leah, for environmental concerns and for health reasons. And also to avoid a lot of traffic in San Francisco streets. One of the issues we're seeing, though, is that city officials have been reluctant, I think, to acknowledge that there are going to be slower traffic in some places, that it's going to be harder to find parking spaces in some cases. And when pushed, they're very good then of making a case saying, yeah, there have to be trade-offs. This is our policy, transit-first policy in San Francisco. We want to discourage driving. So I think that's the politics of it. It's a very potent political group, advocacy group in San Francisco. They've been very good at working with the city officials, of working with community groups, doing outreach to business groups, of cultivating the media, a lot of ways to get the plan forward. San Francisco is eager to be out front in bicycling. I think we've fallen behind other cities, New York City, Portland, I think Minneapolis or other cities where there's very robust bicycling areas. And you think San Francisco, boy, we have hilly streets. How can it happen here with bicycling? But they've been pretty good at mapping out a network where you can get around even if you're not in the best of shape.
Leah Sham, one of the things I hear from time to time about the Bicycle Coalition is that, how do you say it, that they tend to strong arm at City Hall, that there's a kind of a bullying aspect to your lobbying. And that's another way of saying you're very effective. But how do you respond to that?
That's interesting. I'll be honest that I haven't heard that. What we saw last Friday when we had literally 20-1 supporters to opponents, last Friday we saw more than 200 supporters come out to City Hall. And these were moms like Brigitte, who lives in the Excelsior and brought her two sons, Maureen, who lives in Bernal Heights and brought her son, who's about six, John and Max with their two sons from the mission, Ted with his daughter. We saw about a dozen people there with their children. Under the ages of 10, we saw literally, 200 people taking their morning off to spend time talking about their experiences bicycling. And what we heard over and over again from these folks is, I just want to have the choice to ride. Not a single person there, and I sat through it all, not a single person there said, wow, I want to rip everybody out of their car and make them ride a bicycle. That's not what it's about. That's not at all what this is about. And I'll say what we're looking for are choices for people who do want to choose healthy and affordable modes of transportation. I'll say it's unfortunate. And, Rob's got a strong voice right now because he's got a lawsuit against the city. So he's definitely being heard. It's unfortunate he's still trying to frame this as a bikes versus car debate. And I'll say I agree very much with Mayor Newsom, who last Friday said the days of the bike versus car debate are over. It's now a debate about how do we move forward for the environment, for the health of our city.
Well, I mentioned at the beginning that almost all of these projects were approved. One that was not was one involving 2nd Street, south of Market. And I want to bring in Jamie Whitaker, who's vice president of the Rincon Hill Neighborhood Association. And Mr. Whitaker, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us what your objections, your concerns were about the plans for your part of the city.
Well, there are two neighborhood associations and a business association that spoke on Friday. And we became aware of the specific design for 2nd Street just in May. We're certainly for bike lanes. Rincon Hill neighbors are very thankful to the Bicycle Coalition for pushing to get bicycle lanes added to Beale, Howard, and Fremont Streets. The issue with the 2nd Street design, and it's just the design, we want bike lanes, is that eliminating 50% of the capacity on 2nd Street is, from our point of view, going to push cars into our neighborhoods and create more traffic congestion on Bryant, Harrison, Folsom, Howard, possibly Mission and Market. And we would like a Valencia Street design with a middle utility lane in order to allow vehicles to still turn left instead of making three right turns on our long, uninterrupted streets.
Now, when you say that you found out about it in May, here we are, it's still June, does that mean the process, the outreach wasn't as effective as it could have been? Why? I assume that you're part of a neighborhood association. I would think that you'd be one of the first groups that would be reached out to.
Exactly. And in San Francisco, the most city departments are very good, and including the MTA is very good about reaching out to the neighborhood groups. If nothing else, there's the Rincon Point South Beach Citizens Advisory Committee that has existed for years, and most everything that affects our neighborhoods at least shows up there, and that did not happen this time around, at least at the during the time that the design was being created. So we did not have input from our neighborhoods.
My producer, Judy Campbell, points out it's July. So we're into July, but it's still only a couple months away from when you were first notified about it, or at least found out about it. So is it your sense then, and those of the people in your organization, that this is going to happen for your part of town? You're just hoping it's modified?
Exactly. I certainly hope so. I hope to see bike lanes on Second Street before the end of the year. Whether or not we have a middle utility turn lane or not, we're going to be working with the MTA, and hopefully the Bicycle Coalition will join us at the table, because we're certainly all members of the Church of Sustainability, so to speak, and we recognize the benefits of safety and also to the environment of adding bicycle lanes. The debate is the standards, MTA standards require 54 feet to include a center utility lane that the neighbors want, and there are portions of Second Street that are 52 and a half feet wide. So we're talking about a foot and a half difference here.
Leah Shaham, this notion that the debate of cars versus bikes is over, what Jamie Whitaker is suggesting is that it's not quite over. That there are concerns, and that neighborhoods, even the ones that are supportive of the bike lanes, are concerned about, where does that traffic go? It's not going to just evaporate.
I think what we're hearing from Jamie, and I really commend him and his neighbors, we've been talking with them closely, are that they do want the bike lanes. They do see the value of a more livable, calm street, a more multimodal street, and person after person. And let me say, there were only about a dozen opponents at the entire hearing last Friday compared to about 200 supporters.
But could that be in part because of the maybe inadequate outreach that Jamie Whitaker's talking about?
I think the folks have done a really good job of getting their neighbors, getting the word out there. Let me say that on Second Street, there were also more than 25 businesses who supported it, and some pretty big businesses like Chronicle Books and major restaurants and architecture firms, et cetera, along the way, including Clear Channel, which is down there, which is interesting. But I want to point out that Jamie and his neighbors have been really, I think, thoughtful and supportive. As you heard him say, he really wants the bike lanes. His neighbors want the bike lanes. That's not the problem. I think we're really talking about details at this point, which is an exciting thing, and it's an evolution, I think, for folks like Rachel and Judson that have been watching this for 10 years. 10 years ago, there really was a debate over whether bikes belonged on the road. That's really not what you're hearing, except from the likes of, say, a Rob Anderson. But you're hearing our politicians, our public say they want the improvements. And again, I mentioned this poll that was done about a year and a half ago. 75% of San Francisco adults said they want city government to do more. They're asking for the city to encourage bicycling more for all of the reasons that they know help the city.
All right, Jamie Whitaker, thanks so much for joining us this morning. And Judson True, there are a lot of bikes on the streets in San Francisco, and I saw a whole lot of them on Friday afternoon. It was critical mass the last Friday of the month. And I'm just wondering, how concerned is the city about bikes and cars sharing the road increasingly in San Francisco? There have been some fatalities, some very serious accidents.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why the bicycle plan is so important, because it is about making bicycling safer. And by separating some of the facilities, and also the bicycle plan includes components like education for bicyclists and motorists, and for better enforcement and other safety related aspects. So it's not just about the bike lanes. It's also about the safety, education, and enforcement that are part of the plan. And so I think that there's no doubt that we need to continue to do more to make the streets safer, but I think the bicycle plan is exactly about that.
When you say enforcement, what exactly is the law for bicycles? Because a lot of bicyclists, at least especially in the city, don't stop for stop signs, for example. Or they're supposed to, I assume.
Sure. Bicyclists have the same, under the California Vehicle Code, they follow the same laws as motorists. That means that both they have to obey stop signs and streetlights, and that they have a right to a lane, just like a vehicle does. So they have the same rights and responsibilities of motorists.
And how often do bikers get tickets for running red lights or stop
signs? One part of the bicycle plan is that we're going to work closely with the police department and the traffic company, not just on ticketing bicyclists, but on making sure that everyone obeys the traffic laws.
All right. We have much more to talk about in the coming hour, and we'd love for you to join us. The number here at Forum is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this morning for Michael Krasny. And our topic this hour is San Francisco's plan to expand bicycle lanes in the city. It was just approved last week. Joining us, Leah Shaham. She's executive director of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. Also with us, Rob Anderson, who is a blogger and sued the city over its plans for the bike lane several years ago. Rachel Gordon, reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. And Judson True, spokesman for the Municipal Transportation Agency, the MTA, here in San Francisco. And joining us now on the phone, Charlie O'Hanlon, who is the owner of a business on 17th Street, one of the streets in the city where bike lanes are going to be put in. Mr. O'Hanlon, good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I don't know if you heard the first half of our conversation, but tell us your experience. You're a business owner that is on one of these streets, as I said, where a bike lane is set to go in. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I don't have any problem whatsoever with having a bike lane down here. There's a lot of people that use this street to ride bicycles every day. We have neighbors on the street who are part of the Bicycle Coalition. You know, my thoughts on it were, you know, I welcome it. It's great. It's a good thing to have, actually. And ultimately, it kind of brings the neighborhood up. It brings more of a certain type of traffic through the neighborhood, which I have no problem with. I did have a problem with part of the plan, which I don't think was actually an agenda that the Bicycle Coalition was pushing, per se. It was just something that kind of got tagged along with the project, mainly because of logistical problems.
Tell us what it is.
On the 18th of May, some flyers were slapped up around in our neighborhood that said, you know, they were going to be instating these bike lanes, and then kind of tacked on the bottom of that said, "Establish towway, no parking anytime." And one of the streets that was listed was 17th Street on the north side between Valencia and Harrison. Well, my business is there, and my business is motorcycle repair, and I specifically have motorcycle parking in front of my business to do my business, because you cannot do this type of business without street parking.
And so what you went to the city with your concerns?
I spent quite a bit of time just trying to find out who was behind it, who could I even contact to talk about this. And that in and of itself was kind of a very long, frustrating process. Eventually I did get through and talk to some people at MTA, and you know, spoke also eventually down the road with Leah, who's on your show there, who I must say was very helpful and a very easy person to work with.
So how were your concerns addressed? I mean, is your business going to be affected by...
Well, you know, at this point, unfortunately, things are not resolved. So we're still kind of trying to work through that. But, you know, I think that we're going to resolve it in the right way. I mean, the reality is down here, there's plenty of room on my street for everybody and all the vehicles that need to operate down here. I mean, I've been here for 10 years, so I'm very, very, very well aware and very well acquainted with the type of traffic and the type of use on this street.
Judson True, respond to that, if you will. Again, the notion that there wasn't adequate outreach to small businesses in this case, neighborhood associations in the other, when we heard from Jamie Whitaker.
Yeah, I think, well, the bike plan and the EIR have been part of a three-year process. It's gotten a lot of media attention. And so that's a big part of the outreach. But on the specific outreach that we've done, I think that the postings and the public hearings that we've done, there have been dozens of them. We've also met individually with almost anyone who has any concern about the plan. I've called some of our staff members, ask them a question or two about a media inquiry, and they've been in a meeting with either the Rincon Hill folks or folks on 17th Street like Charlie. So, and I think that where we stand now is a testament to the robustness of the outreach and to the back and forth that we've had, because on Friday, the 17th Street bike lanes were legislated, but the parking removal has not been finalized because we are still continuing the outreach. So I think that...
But how can you do an EIR that gets submitted in response to a lawsuit and not know what the final plan is going to be?
Well, we do know what the final plan was, and all of the designs that went through the public process were in either the initial draft EIR or in the comments and responses and staff-initiated changes. It's all fairly technical.
But you say you don't know yet with how this issue is going to be resolved. How can you say that and also say...
Multiple options can get analyzed in an EIR. So then you have kind of where you are now, and then a couple different ways to go. So that's really the answer on that specific question. But we had initially estimated that almost 200 parking spaces could be removed on 17th Street, and right now there are about 50 that are slated for removal. And if further parking spaces will be removed, there will be further outreach, and our board would have to legislate it. So There's still room for dialogue.
Okay. Charlie O'Hanlon, thanks so much for joining us. We've got a lot of people who want to join our conversation. Why don't we go to the phones?
Thank you.
And, thank you for joining us. Robert is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Robert.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding the Bicycle Coalition, if they have any educational programs in the works to educate bikers to obey traffic laws, because I've seen that as a significant problem, and if there's going to be more bikers, it could be even more substantial.
Thank you. When you say you see it as a problem, as a driver or a pedestrian or a biker?
Both. I mean, I've had that problem, and also as a biker, where some bicyclists are not obeying stop signs and traffic lights and so on.
All right, Robert, thanks for the call. Leah?
Thank you so much, Robert, for that question. Yeah, this is something that the Bicycle Coalition's working on in coordination with MTA. There's a lot of effort. One of the main things that folks can sign up for are free monthly bike education classes. And I think it's important to emphasize these are for adults who know how to ride a bike. It's not a class to learn how to ride a bike. It's rather how to ride safely and responsibly in the city. Also, what we do is get out probably about 30,000 pieces of material throughout the year that are safety materials, emphasizing folks' rights and responsibilities. We also team up with the police department and groups like Senior Action Network and Walk San Francisco throughout the year to make sure that folks are also giving pedestrian rights, etc. And also, the city's done a great job of getting advertisements out, educating both bicyclists and motorists. I think it's important to remember, for better or worse, there are scofflaws in society. They walk, they ride bikes, they drive. They get around in all different modes. You know, unfortunately, I think those scofflaws kind of give the rest of us a bad name, and that's unfortunate, and that's something we're trying to do, is really make sure that as many people as possible know the rights to the road and their rules and responsibilities.
All right, Robert, thanks for the call. Let's go now to Berkeley, and Harvey is on the line. Hi, Harvey.
Hi there, Scott. Well, first of all, I want to say that people in cars are protected. People on bicycles are not. We have to protect people on bicycles. Cars have blind spots. I have myself witnessed several accidents where the car just did not see, and especially drivers are so distracted these days. That's why it's important to have bike lanes. And number two, the level of obesity in our society. We're going to be paying so much money. San Francisco is going to be paying so much money for sick kids, overweight kids. It's time that we got them on bikes. It's time that we got them exercise so that the city can save money on heart disease and on diabetes and all that. So, and number three, the third one is that San Francisco is one of the most picturesque cities in the world. The fact that if tourists know that they can bicycle around the city and just stop at their leisure, not, you know, and just come and go, I think San Francisco could become a world leader in tourism and actually make a lot of money by initiating this bicycle thing. And number four, I'd like to propose something for the not too distant future, and that would be closing streets down during rush hours. I would like to see streets closed down between, say, 6 and 10 a.m. and then 3 and 7 p.m. certain streets in the city, just for bikers, so that they don't have to inhale exhaust to the cars, and they'll be safe. And I think this will also give rise to even more bikers and a cleaner air,
okay,
water, and cleaner soil.
All right, Harvey, thanks so much. You know, Harvey mentions tourism, and, you know, I bike across the Golden Gate Bridge a fair amount, and there is a company, I don't recall the name, but they are renting bikes now to tourists, and they are a menace, I have to tell you. They don't have any idea what the laws are. They are taking pictures while they're riding their bike across the bridge. They're unpredictable, and they're just dangerous. And I'm just wondering, does the Bicycle Coalition work with a company like that to say, hey, you know, you got to clean your act up?
It's a great point. We've teamed up with the several bike rental companies, especially down at Fisherman's Wharf. Those are the busiest ones. Interesting to note, I've talked to a couple of them. They say their business has doubled in the last couple of years. So you're definitely right in noticing more people renting the bikes. I think what you see is a lot of folks from other places, adults, frankly, who don't bicycle much, so they're not real familiar with how to ride. Plus, you get up on that bridge, and it's a little intimidating. You've got the wind. You've got a lot of people. You've got people going by quickly. So what we're trying to do is give out more safety information and really have them emphasize the safety responsibilities up on the bridge. And I think it's an ongoing effort we're doing.
Some email here. Nancy writes, while I definitely support expanded lanes for bicyclists, I wonder how your guests suggest that bicyclists can be made to stop at stop signs. We've talked about that a little. I even see some go through traffic lights. She writes, I'm rarely on the road when I don't see someone whizzing through an intersection, endangering others as well as themselves. We talked about that outreach and education that you're endorsing. Christine writes, please ask bike advocates about the recent trend of cyclists riding on sidewalks and cruising right through crosswalks to the detriment of pedestrians. I live in Oakland, and increasingly I see this trend. If they are accorded new privileges, they should also respect the rules of the road.
And I should say that's a really important thing to us. I consider the roads, the sidewalks, a hierarchy. You have pedestrians at the top. Pedestrians are, you know, frankly, the slowest moving. When we're walking, we're the most vulnerable. You have bicyclists under that. You have transit riders. You have drivers. And bicyclists need, of course, to be respecting pedestrians' rights. One of the main things that this new bicycle plan does that was passed is encourage the police department and all the agencies that work together to prioritize enforcement that is actually the most dangerous. And that's no matter who the user is, whether that's a bicyclist or a driver. We really need to be putting emphasis on those behaviors that are most dangerous.
Scott, I also want to jump in there. I think whenever I've written stories about the bike plan, that's to the emails you got, that's the number one concern from people. What about bicyclists not obeying traffic laws? And Leah brought it up earlier. Well, there you always see scofflaw drivers and pedestrians who jaywalk and bicyclists who, as you said, blow through stop signs or stoplights. It's going to be incumbent, I think, on the Municipal Transportation Agency to make that enforcement a strong component. And in fact, just recently, the MTA got more control over the police department's traffic division, the motorcycle cops, to decide how they're going to be deployed. So the board, the MTA board, with the Board of Supervisors and consent of the mayor, have to decide whether that's going to be a priority. I think otherwise you're going to see a lot of criticism continued about bicycling in San Francisco.
Justin Shearer, do you want to add to that?
I mean, we completely accept that responsibility. I mean, continuing to work with the San Francisco Police Department on those kind of issues. And it goes down to the individual level. A few months ago, the manager of our bicycle program, Oliver Guida, told me about a bicyclist. He was riding on the Wiggle, and a bicyclist went through – it was either a stop sign or a red light. And Oliver, you know, kind of gave a kind of gentle chastising, and the guy looked at him like he was, oh, well, maybe I'll think about that next time a little bit more. So it's
– sometimes it's not always so friendly.
Yeah, right, right. You could – yeah, you don't want to necessarily, you know, get in a fight over something like that. But I think that it does go to the individual cultural level of communicating with other cyclists, and I think the Bike Coalition is doing a great job of creating a culture where people obey traffic laws, and that's important.
Leah Sham.
And if I could add, I think we need to remember this is an equal opportunity area for learning. When people drive, and most of us do it all, right? Like Judson said, sometimes we take transit, sometimes we walk, sometimes we drive, et cetera. When we drive, we need to be thinking about the responsibility of that. I think, you know, we don't think, wow, should we create more traffic lanes and more parking spots if drivers are going to continue to sometimes drive, you know, irresponsibly. We have to be thinking about on the road a higher level enforcement. Like Rachel said, I would say the city is very behind in prioritizing enforcement on the road. If you look at, you know, the number of gun deaths, which is just tragic in the city, compared to the number of deaths on the streets, it is also tragic. Yet it doesn't get nearly the amount of attention. So I think that's something the city needs to wake up to.
All right. Back to the phones now. Roland is on the line in Palo Alto. Good morning.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the program. As an avid bicyclist, the issue of the stop sign is very significant to me. It seems to me, you know, in California, we developed what's called the California Stop, championed by car drivers, where people come to a nearly complete stop, look both ways, and then go forward.
Kind of a rolling stop.
Yes, and it seems to me that it's unreasonable to ask a bicyclist to come to a full stop and put their foot down, which is basically the definition of a stop, unless you can do a bicycle stand, which few people can. And so I'm wondering if it might be possible to redefine stop for bicyclists to the concept of a yield, where you slow to maybe 1 or 2 miles an hour, look both ways. And if the traffic is clear, then you're allowed to go ahead.
Well, before we redefine it, let's define what it actually is, Leah Sham. Is it you have to put your foot down, right, and as part of the stop?
As I understand, that is the law. I want to be honest, though, that I'm not an expert on that. You know, let me mention that Idaho has a law. It's been in place for many years now. And the law in Idaho is that bicyclists treat legally stop signs as a yield sign. And it's exactly the point that Roland refers to there, understanding that bicyclists have a different momentum. Rather than coming to the full stop, they need to slow down enough that they look both ways, or all ways, of course, check the intersection before going through. But from what I've heard, that's been a very successful interpretation there.
Anything to add, Judson True, in terms of how the city interprets it or enforces it?
My understanding is that that would be an issue of state law, and that would be the kind of thing that we all would have to come together on. And it's been discussed a little bit. It's gotten
Although
some media coverage.
Although you could presumably carve out a waiver for San Francisco
that
or
would,
a change.
That would still be a state law change to carve out that kind of waiver. But yeah, so it's, you know, I think – but I mean, as a sort of taking off almost my MTA hat just as a user, I don't think it's that kind of situation that – upsets drivers or bicyclists. It's really when a bicyclist doesn't slow down at all and doesn't yield the right of way, or when a driver doesn't do that, or when a driver turns right in front of a bicyclist and doesn't even bother to look over his or her shoulder to see if there's a bicyclist on his or her right as they make a right turn. So I don't think that we're talking about, you know, a bicyclist going 1 or 2 miles. And I'm not saying that that's okay, but I don't think we're talking about that as the main issue here.
Rachel Gordon, did you want to say
something? There's also a chance for the city to get creative, as we've seen the city did at the intersection of Fell and Masonic Street, of having special bicycle signals. Now, Judson, the one project, or one of the biggest projects that got forward during that 3-year injunction has been the signal change at Fell Masonic. The city, in fact, had to go and get special permission for the court to go forward, and that's because there were so many accidents of drivers and or cars and bicycles colliding there. And what they did is make a special bicycle signal to have it so cars have a chance to go, pedestrians have a chance to go, bicyclists have a chance to go. Everyone has their right of way, and it seems on the whole, and Leah, you could probably speak to it best, but on the whole, it's been successful. There still have been some problems where either the bikes or cars haven't yielded when they were supposed to, but it really has cut down the menace at that intersection. I think the city, as part of the bicycle plan, intends to make more of these special signalized intersections where it's deemed appropriate.
Leah.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think we all benefit when there's more predictability. I think that's a key word. There's clarity and predictability about who's going to do what. That intersection's a great example. Bike lanes in general are a great example. And I want to mention that in terms of safety, which people are talking about, the number one thing we can do is give more predictability on the streets, because when you have more people biking together, you have more visibility. It increases safety. We've seen that time and time again. I think the age-old example is Valencia Street in the Mission District of San Francisco. When those bike lanes were striped, a year later, the city found that the number of people biking on that street increased 144%. More impressively, the injury collisions on that street decreased by 15%. And that's not just among bicyclists. That was driver versus driver, driver versus pedestrian. Collisions went down. It became a safer street. And that's really what we're talking about here.
Although coming back to that signal by the panhandle there, I mean, I always assume as a biker that people don't see me. I mean, you have to really be very defensive, because just as we've seen in crosswalks with pedestrians, if you think you're safe, you're going to be less vigilant. And I think you can also open yourself up to getting hit.
Yeah, that's a good point. As a bicyclist, you really do want to be aware.
Yeah, I biked on the panhandle on Sunday, and I think that, you know, I saw the red arrow for the cars, but I still looked over my shoulder to make sure a car wasn't turning left against the red arrow as I had the green bicycle signal. And, you know, it was fine. But you always have to watch around you.
Another email here. Julie writes, I take Muni, drive, bike, and walk in San Francisco, and auto traffic slows down Muni much more than bicyclists, with the exception of critical mass once a month. And Leah Sham, I want to ask you about critical mass, because it's very popular. We saw it just last Friday. It has a mixed history, I think it's fair to say. There was a very violent confrontation one Friday when Willie Brown was mayor, I believe. To what extent has that colored the image that people have of bicyclists in the city?
Yeah, I think it has. Let me start by saying the Bicycle Coalition does not organize or sponsor critical mass. That's not what we do. We do the day-to-day work of organizing on the ground level, community organizing and such.
But fair to say you support it.
No, actually, we really don't have a stand on it. That's right. Whether we want it to happen or don't want it to happen really has no bearing on whether it happens. Now, it's been happening for 17 years. It's a very, you know, big San Francisco tradition. I think it's been a real double-edged sword, like you say. In the early days, when not many people were talking or thinking about bicycling, critical mass definitely, I would say, had a positive impact in raising the dialogue around the benefits of bicycling. Now, as you know, the public and politicians have embraced bicycling more. And frankly, as our whole nation has kind of become more aware of the environmental and health benefits of sustainable transportation, you know, I think there's probably less urgency to those rides. So I think it's changing a lot.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and John is on the line in Sausalito. Hi, John.
Good morning. Calling as someone whose business is on Second Street, so I think bicyclists and everybody don't appreciate what a unique village-like street Second Street is.
What part of Second Street are you on?
Second Market, and that's the most heavily pedestrian traffic part of the city. It's a very unique street, but I'm also calling as someone who campaigned for mayor by bicycle in 71. And in 75, when I campaigned, the platform was really heavily alternate transportation-centric, featuring
So do you have a question?
Yes, and featuring the garages where cars would park, and the city would be turned over the streets largely to pedestrians and transit and bicycles. But what's missing in this whole green picture with our green mayor and everything else in transit first is the imminent Presidio Freeway. So that's something we have to work on.
All right. I hadn't heard anything about that. Maybe he's talking about Doyle Drive. I don't know. That is a reasonable question. That is going to be redesigned. A lot of bikers go through the Presidio. I assume that those things are not going to be combined in any way. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the bicycle component, if there is one on Doyle Drive.
Yeah,
I know the Presidio itself is making some big bicycle and pedestrian improvements, which should help make better connections to the bridge and more recreational riding.
What about the new Bay Bridge that's under construction? I've heard that the new part is going to have bike lanes, but the old part doesn't. So how is that going to work, Leah Sham?
We're going to have half a bridge. You hear about the Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska.
You'd bring a kayak, I think, if you bike.
Multimodal. It's the ultimate multimodal. Yeah, as you go over, you'll probably see the new Eastern Span being built, a beautiful wide pathway, which will be used not only by bicyclists and pedestrians, but it's also a maintenance pathway. I should emphasize that. It's going to be a good use for those maintaining the bridge and in terms of safety when there are accidents and such on the bridge. But there's nothing planned on the western half, which we think is a really tragic oversight. I should say, though, that the Regional Metropolitan Transportation Commission just approved a little over $1 million expenditure to do the next level of study on the Western Span pathway. So they are taking it seriously. Obviously, it's a big project, an expensive project. But, hey, with all those stimulus dollars coming by, I think we should be getting in line.
All right, another email from Lori in Berkeley who writes, I must agree with your guest, Rob Anderson. I believe the cycling community has disproportionate power. I used to work for a major bicycling organization in San Francisco, but eventually quit in disgust after numerous run-ins and near accidents with other cyclists around the Bay Area. I never feel as unsafe as a driver among other motorists as I did as a cyclist among other bike riders. Most flagrantly disobey laws and traffic signals, and it frustrates me that a largely lawless populace has such pull and such a prominent profile in this environmental movement. Rachel Gordon, the Bicycle Coalition has become very, very popular. How much power does it wield?
It wields a lot of power. I mean, we saw at the MTA board that there was a unanimous vote there, the Planning Commission, unanimous vote. Mayor Gavin Newsom, who when he was supervisor, we were just talking about this before the show, was opposed to a Polk Street bike lane. Now he's Mr. Green Mayor running for governor on the platform of transportation sustainability. So there's a lot of clout there. They're very well organized as a constituency. But again, it dovetails perfectly into San Francisco's transit first policy. What's more environmentally friendly than walking or bicycling? It doesn't have, even if it's biodiesel buses, there's no fuel that's needed. You don't have to worry really about carving out street space for a lot of parking spaces that cars take up. So in that sense, it with the transit first policy, it's perfect there. We've seen, though, that over the years, the bicycle groups have become a little more political savvy in how they decide to push a project forward. So let's look at the Saturday closures in Golden Gate Park, for example. It's something that they seem to have the kind of long view for. They tried to close Golden Gate Park, the eastern end of the park, to auto traffic on Saturdays, got held up there, kind of stopped, said, let's do a pilot project, move forward. So it's not, I believe they've gotten more politically savvy at not trying to ram projects through, but to take their time of kind of soothing not just the city hall politicians and bureaucrats, but also to go and do reach out to the neighborhood groups. And that's where they've kind of come into their own politically.
All right, let's try to get another call or two in here. Chuck is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Just on the top of the Golden Gate Bridge, I think at least as much of a problem as the tourists is the racers, who I think really need to kind of back off on their steroid dosage a bit. They're basically riding on the sidewalk. But
Although it is designated for bicycles there.
Well, during the week, it's shared.
Fair enough, yep.
But anyway, what I wanted to say was I think the bike route and the bike plan in general is fantastic, and I'm all for it. But there are a couple of places where I think it would make more sense to put the bike route on a parallel side street rather than on, say, Masonic, for example, or Portola, and places where it's...
But where would you just take Portola? What would be an alternate street?
Well, it's a little bit circuitous, but you can kind of go... I'm not sure of the names of them, but you're going through the, you know, basically down on Mount Davidson on one side or by West Portal on the other side.
But isn't part of it, I mean, because there are a lot of stop signs, and as you say, it's kind of circuitous. I would think, Leah, that, you know, as you plan...
Go ahead. But anyway, I think another interesting thing about Portola, which you also see, for example, on the beginning of Arguello, is where it's on a steep downhill, and you're going, say, you know, 35 miles an hour within a couple of feet of the door, and it would make more sense, in my opinion, safer for everybody just to take a lane. And I could see the same thing applying on Portola.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you about that, Leah. Shyam, this idea of taking a lane, you do see bicyclists will sometimes ride right in the middle of the lane, which can be frustrating for drivers.
If you're going the speed limit, that's cool.
But it's also legal, isn't it?
It is. It is legal. Thanks for mentioning that. According to California Vehicle Code, bicyclists have the right to the full lane. It's important to remember one should be riding as far to the right as safe and practicable, and important for folks who may not bicycle to realize, because I know drivers may not understand and may be frustrated, the worst thing, the most dangerous thing a bicyclist can do is ride too close to those parked cars. And most places in San Francisco, we do have parked cars along the street. You don't want to be pushing yourself right into that, what we call the door zone. That's the most dangerous place to be. That's where most collisions and injuries happen, because people think they should get out of that traffic lane. They want to get out of the driver's way. But really, they should stay out of that door zone to make sure a car door doesn't open and hit them. They should really be taking the lane and moving through. Now, drivers should be slowing down, signaling, and passing when it's safe.
Just quickly now, what about Chuck's point, though, that you know, maybe we should have put some of these routes in less trafficked parts of the city, parallel routes and so on?
Sure. And the routes that the city chose have been studied for, oh my goodness, probably about 7 or 8 years now. They've been very well considered. You think about things like flatness. Obviously, that's important for bicyclists. Directness. How do you connect to places like BART stations and major employment centers? Obviously, we want to be in places that are less high traffic. We're not choosing the high traffic routes. That's not where we want to be. Interestingly, you know, there's not a lot of choices there.
And of course, you want to make it a route that makes sense and people are going to use as well. We're out of time, but I want to thank all of our guests this hour. Leah Shyam from the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. Thanks also to Rachel Gordon from the San Francisco Chronicle, Judson True from the MTA, and Rob Anderson, who was on the phone earlier with us as well. Forum is produced by Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell, and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. I'm Scott Schaefer, and for Michael Krasny, thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.